Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
This is Van Hipp, chairman of American Defense International and author of The New Terrorism, How to Fight It and Defeat It. And you're listening today to my friend Audrey Russo on Real Talk.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Well, the swamp is now targeting Representative Jim Jordan. Why are their sights set on this patriot? And one of the Leavenworth 10, whose mom we had on the show, Sergeant Derek Miller, is finally receiving the freedom he deserves. And we're going to find out what that is. And the communist revolution never stopped. Can a counter-revolution still begin in schools? Well, we're going to discuss this and more with my next guest. For my new listeners, Diana West is the author of several best-selling books, including The Death of the Grown-Up, How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization, and American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. She's a former nationally syndicated conservative American columnist whose blog is one of Newsmax's 50 best conservative blogs and tackles controversial subjects such as the impact of Islam and the failures of counterinsurgency. Diana has contributed essays and features to numerous periodicals, including The Wall Street Journal, The Weekly Standard, and The Washington Post. She has also been a columnist for The Washington Times, Scripps Howard News Service, and United Media. And she can be read at The Daily Caller. Diana is also a popular analyst and contributor on both radio and TV. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Diana West.
Always good to be back.
Oh, it's always great to have you with us, Diana. And there's just so much to discuss, so we want to jump in here. As I mentioned in the intro, the swamp is targeting Jim Jordan. And you graciously put up, because I wouldn't have been able to find this clip, you put up a clip on your website, and it reminded me of some years ago, they used to have a problem, what they called swarming, which was these, you know, criminal teens would surround, like, as if it was bees in for an attack, you know, and they would swarm someone. Well, that's exactly what it looked like. Coming from, I was stunned.
Yes, well, that's just business as usual on Capitol Hill. You're referring to the Democrats interrupting Jim Jordan's question period, which is, you know, something we do see quite a lot of. I think, though, that the Democrats could not protect Rod Rosenstein from Jim Jordan's Incisive Questioning. And what we've been seeing unfold is really the attempted, I don't think it's going to work, but the revenge of the swamp. Rod Rosenstein being the Deputy Attorney General, who was being exposed in questioning in terms of his own obstruction of the co-equal branch of government, the Congress's request from the Justice Department for documents that just goes back forever at this point to try to resolve all of these scandals related to the intergovernmental conspiracy against Donald Trump. And so this is the drama that is encapsulated in this 5-10 minute segment that you referred to. But what we've seen unfold since that day is the revenge of the swamp on Jim Jordan in an attempt to smear him with a scandal related to his time as an assistant wrestling coach back at Ohio State University 30 years ago, relating to a team doctor who's been dead for 13 years, who has been accused by some very dodgy witnesses, you can read about them, of sexual misconduct. The man, as I said, has been dead for 13 years. And Ohio, actually, the statute of limitations on sex crimes in Ohio is 20 years. So we're looking at this manufactured crisis that is attempting to smear Jim Jordan by suggesting that he, as an assistant coach, did nothing when complaints by macho college wrestlers who were complaining about a handsy doctor went unaddressed. I mean, the whole thing is kind of ridiculous, but it's equally ridiculous if Jim Jordan or anyone else is guilty of such a thing, then so is the entire Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton when it comes to the behavior of Bill Clinton. So, I mean, the hypocrisy upon hypocrisy is instructive, because we are seeing, again, this attempt to manufacture a smear against Jim Jordan to undermine him at a point when his organization within the Congress, the House Freedom Caucus, which is the conservative Republicans, I believe they're up to 31, they are exerting tremendous clout in the Congress, and Jim Jordan is a potential next Speaker of the House.
Right.
Assuming the Republicans hold. So we've got a lot of pieces here to consider, but if people are tuning in after 4th of July weekend and wondering what's going on, and quite a lot is going on, and wondering why Jim Jordan would be targeted, it is because he is a leader, and he is exposing the swamp, and he is on the cusp of even greater power. So this is why he is now being targeted. And it's I don't think it will work, but it's an intensive... it's an intensive firestorm at the moment.
What an incredible disgrace on their part. And it's so true what you said about the Democrat Party. To be honest with you, as a whole, they are perps, okay, in many cases.
Absolutely, for real. This is manufactured. I mean, we've actually seen things like 6 former Ohio State coaches who also coincided with Jim Jordan and this deceased doctor, who is the person who's being actually investigated. They have come out in support of Jim Jordan and said that they didn't see or were told, they were told nothing, they saw nothing, as Jim Jordan has also said. But I mean, the facts of the matter mean nothing. And when you actually learn, when you peel back the onion a little bit, you start to see what's really going on. You have an independent independent investigation on this Ohio State incident 30 years ago being conducted by the law firm Perkins Coie, which is the funnel for the DNC and the Hillary for America campaign of the money that paid for the Steele dossier, as people will remember. So that's the independent investigation. You have Barack Obama's former ethics chief now calling on the Congress to embark on an ethics investigation. Okay, so I mean, all the gang members are assembling. This same man, Norm Eisens, is his name. He is now the chairman of a group which is funded in. It's a group called, the acronym is CRU, something about responsible something. CRU. It's Soros funded. So we're looking at all of the gangland members coming together, and that's not even all. The lead lawyer of this independent investigation, so-called, is a man named T. Marcus Funk, who spent some years at the Justice Department as a federal prosecutor in Chicago working for Patrick Fitzgerald. Patrick Fitzgerald was the special counsel appointed by James Comey to investigate Scooter Libby and essentially frame him for that leak about Valerie Plame that the Justice Department, including Fitzgerald, including Comey, including then FBI Director Mueller, knew was not by Scooter Libby, but rather by Richard Armitage. And yet Scooter Libby was the one who was slammed and you know, went through everything and was recently pardoned by President Trump. So we're actually looking at the entire cabal now reassembled against Jim Jordan. And I will add that Patrick Fitzgerald, who was the boss of this lead lawyer, is now on James Comey's legal team. Now, Jim Jordan is somebody who is very important in the investigation into Comeygate. So it's like all of these circles just keep tightening. Always the same group. It's like a crime family at this point. I will say that. It is like a crime family at this point. And what they are doing is not trying to shed light and reveal victims 30 years ago. They are trying to use this very flimsy kind of effort to try to undermine and distract and take away from the prestige of Representative Jordan, which at this moment is increasingly heroic, given what he is able to do and his relentlessness in pursuing this corruption inside the Justice Department, inside the FBI, inside the Obama administration in the 2016 election period and thereafter. So this is kind of what we're looking at. And I'm sorry if it's a lot, but it all does interconnect.
Yeah, no, absolutely it does. And what I do think, too, is that some even that have been in the Democrat Party, as we see with that walk away movement, is that they see how hateful, how deceptive they are. You know, they offer nothing but hatred, the Democrat Party and people that have been in it now are seeing that.
Yes, I think that's true. And for me, I think that it's a good time to rethink labels, to rethink party names, to rethink the sort of traditional dichotomy that we usually view politics. I think it's time to really look at political forces in terms of, are they hiding things? Are they trying to bring things into the open? And I think that, you know, this cuts across party lines. Generally speaking, at this point, we are looking at this core group of Trump, America First Republicans, trying to expose things, trying to bring things into the open. And we're looking at the establishment, the traditional, certainly the Democratic Party and so on, and the holdovers, the bureaucrats, the Obama people and so on, trying to hide information from the American people. So I think it's a good way to try to assess politicians. Are you for bringing things to light for the American people to evaluate for ourselves, or are you part of the people who try to keep the conspiracy going, try to keep the darkness complete? And I think that that becomes a really important way, especially for the walk away movement people contemplating that, because this is all about us keeping our sovereignty, not just as a nation, but also as citizens. And you can't be full citizens. You can't be self-governing without this kind of information and understanding and transparency on the people who have set themselves up as our governors, as our leaders, as our as our dictators. So this, I think, is something that people are more and more starting to get a sense of, and that's very, very positive.
It was interesting you used the word dictator, because I think we have a lot of wannabe dictators,
yes,
up on the Hill.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They don't think that we are responsible enough to have the information. I mean, that's essentially at the bottom of so much of this deliberations with the Justice Department and so on. But of course, they don't think we're responsible enough because we might act on it. We might say, you guys are a bunch of crooks and we want the House cleaned. Yeah. I don't mean the House of Representatives. I mean the Justice Department, the FBI, and these other bureaucracies, the intelligence community, and the rest of it on down. We are looking at this grotesque concentration of power that depends on continued secrecy.
So, I wouldn't exactly leave the house out of that cleanup, but anyway.
Right. But not literally the house, just, you know, the house as in cleaning out the house. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to change gears for a second here. You know, in the past, we've had Renee Myers, the mom of one of the Leavenworth 10 on the show. Now, Diana, could you, for those who are not familiar with Sergeant Derek Miller's story, would you share that with us and the good news that we now know?
Yes, Sergeant Derek Miller was leading his men in Afghanistan many, many, many years ago. Now, I believe this incident took place, I believe, in 2010 or 2011. And he was in a situation where there was a defensive perimeter. There was an incursion in the defensive perimeter by an Afghan that Derek Miller found to be a threat to his men, to his position. And he got into a violent struggle and killed the man. And I'm giving it in very simplistic terms, but this essentially was the battlefield situation. And he was brought up on murder charges and convicted. And this was even done, although the witnesses were not clean. The government's case against him was tremendously suspect. He had all manner of support from, you know, great legal team and people fighting for him, because again, we're looking at this fog of war situation where our government, in an effort to appease our various Islamic allies, whether we're looking at Iraq or Afghanistan, would always come down on the side of the quote ally and bust our men. And we had a group of these soldiers who became known as the Leavenworth 10, even though it wasn't always at Leavenworth and it wasn't always 10. But these were the symbolic group of soldiers who came home alive and lived. And essentially that was their crime in the eyes of the United States government. And that includes President Bush and President Obama when we're looking at these prosecutions that took place in these war periods of war. So fast forward to very recently, we're looking at a wonderful situation where Derek Miller had been in life without possibility for life, I believe without possibility of parole or for a very, very, very long time. And he was recently had his sentence commuted to a point where he could go out on parole now. Now, he still needs a pardon because he did nothing wrong except save his men and himself. And that is the bottom line on the case. But at least he will have his freedom if he does not have it already. I believe he was eligible to leave barring procedural steps as of last week. So the last I heard was he was about to go home, and that is great news and something to celebrate. But there are still soldiers inside who should be also pardoned or released, and you know, so this quest goes on. One, including you mentioned offline when we were talking, Sergeant John Hatley, and that's a very important case as well.
And Clint Lawrence as well, too. Yeah.
Yes.
We need to figure out who is left from the Leavenworth 10, and see what we can get together. As far as a movement to ask the president to pardon them. What's pretty disgraceful, Diana, is that at the same time that our military, based upon lies and most of the time using these men as scapegoats, were imprisoning our troops, simultaneously our government was freeing Gitmo detainees.
Well, Gitmo and also thousands of detainees in various prisons in Iraq and Afghanistan, they were amnestied. At various points toward the end of our involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, although we're not out of Afghanistan. But we've seen these mass amnesties or pardons for years of terrorists who killed Americans. So this is sort of the scales of justice here, where you see this mercy extended toward these combatants against our men in Afghanistan and Iraq, and yet the continued incarceration of our own soldiers who put on our uniform, went to war for us, and have had their lives stolen from them by our government and have seen no mercy or exacted in very, very slow terms and lengthy terms. And, you know, you think at this point, the years that many of these men have had to remain in jail simply for fighting these terribly difficult wars with onerous rules of engagement. Or in Iraq, we saw particularly that incredibly difficult urban fighting, against ununiformed combatants and all manner of difficulties that our government imposed on them in sending them into these battlefields. So this is something I will never forgive, particularly President Bush, for. Mm-hmm. It's something that he could have completely erased or changed on leaving office and giving a mass pardon to this literally 10, 20 soldiers whose lives have been ruined by this kind of punishment, and he ignored them, yeah. And he pardoned no one. Yeah. And this, to me, is forever a blot on his record and really on his character and soul.
I think it was very telling of his character, and I've lost all respect for any of the Bushes at this point, so I won't even go there because it'll get ugly.
I know. I have mass Bush derangement myself.
Well, that's... we'll have to do a segment on that.
A segment.
we have a few minutes left, but I really want to touch on this. We've discussed many times that communists took the advice of Antonio Gramsci, who basically said that to eliminate the bourgeois state, one must seize the institutions that reproduce the dominant class's thought patterns. Now, the three, of course, most important were the church, the education system, and the mass media. Diana, can the counter-revolution still take place in the classroom?
Well, yes. I mean, we have to start playing the equivalent of fantasy football on this. But theoretically, yes, I think, of course, it could. And I would add that, you know, this idea was something that Marx and Lenin both and other many, many other communist thinkers knew and understood: the importance of the institutions, the importance of infiltrating education and the churches in particular. Boring from within is not a phrase of Saul Alinsky. It goes all the way back. I mean, you see this early on in all communist theorizing. I think you're referring to a blog I posted, which actually was an incredibly encouraging letter that I received from a high school history teacher who had read American Betrayal, and he actually hopes to implement some of its lessons or some of the documentation that the book draws from in his own teaching of 20th century history. So I was quite thrilled about that because, yes, it is possible. It is the biggest uphill battle I can even imagine, but it does start, of course, one classroom at a time. It's a tremendously difficult endeavor at this point because so much of this ideology is truly hardwired. At this point, we've so conditioned over this past century to believe so much of the socialist program, and it doesn't shock us anymore. It doesn't frighten people. So it is a matter of re-educating them with using an unfortunate phrase, perhaps, but it is necessary to reintroduce the documentation, the personages, the events, the retelling of this history that has been so enormously suppressed and which, frankly, American Betrayal does try to re-expose and reintroduce people to, because there's a lot there and there's a lot more to reintroduce and to re-expose. But I found this to be a heartening development, and I hope to actually be able to assist this teacher who kindly invited me to perhaps speak to his class, maybe just by Skype one day. So that would be a great thrill. I would love that.
Oh, how awesome. Yeah. And what a great segue, because I was going to ask you, where can the listeners follow and support your brilliant work and purchase your books, including American Betrayal, but not just the book itself, I'm saying the paper book where you have in your hand, but the audio book as well.
The audio book, yes, which is great fun to record. Everything is at dianawest.net, and that has all my work and all my books and all my links.
Well, that was simple enough. But of course, I'm going to have everything, the links for that, and also to follow you in social media in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the honor button, and right under the show description, you'll find all the links you need, especially links that will take you directly to purchase the books. And thanks so much again, Diana, for sharing your brilliant assessments with us. We look forward to your return to the show. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.
Bye, Audrey. Thank you so much.
Thank you.